Welcome to Dental Brain Crops. I'm your host, Chelsea Myers, and today I'm joined with the CEO of Mango Voice, Kevin Tallman. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chelsea, grateful to be here, and thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you. So just a little background. The reason that I reached out to you originally was I was actually interacting with some of your team members, and I was like, these are really deep, kind, like real individuals. I don't feel like I'm talking to somebody's, you know, bot. I don't feel like I'm getting fake interactions here. These are some really interesting people. Like, I don't know who's leading this company. So I reached out to you, and then I was, of course, just really excited about our conversation. And so I thought we'd have another similar one here and share it with the world, because I think you've got such a cool story. Lots of really cool stories.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. And you know, funny story too. I met your husband. You introduced me to Ernie, your husband. And it turns out he knows one of my really good friends as well. So small world.
It is. It is. Good people know good people, right?
That's exactly right.
Very good. Okay. So I want to get into Mango Voice, but could we start kind of at the beginning? Because I really love the story that you shared with me about you and your college buddy and kind of that epiphany that you had and the successes that you guys created. Would you be willing to go into that?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to share it. You know, what's interesting, I think a lot of people, especially as they go on their entrepreneurial journey, feel like maybe they don't have the right skill sets. They're not, you know, they weren't born to do this. I'm here to tell you, I wasn't born necessarily with the idea that I would be where I am today. If you would have told me 20 years ago that I'd be where I was today, I would have told you you're crazy. And the reason why is I didn't really necessarily know what I wanted to do. And, you know, I went back to school when I was older. So I was 28 when I went back to college. And in large part, I went back to college because I was recently married and my wife, you know, kind of kicked me in the butt and said, hey, let's figure out a game plan here. And what do you want to do? And she happened to be studying accounting in college. And so I asked her one day, I said, well, how do you like accounting? She goes, I love it. And I said, okay, that sounds great. Let's try that. And went back to school, got my accounting degree, and actually came to really love accounting for a lot of reasons. But while I was there, I met a guy named Bo Davis. And he had just, you know, had this idea to start this business and was just getting it off the ground. And, you know, he said, hey, listen, I don't know accounting. I don't know all these things. Can you help me out with this as I get this going so we can make sure we do this the right way? And we started a business in a college called BYU Idaho in Rexburg, Idaho. And he would take sales calls all day. And after I got done with my classes, I would be in the computer lab doing our QuickBooks and you know, working through contracts, things like that. And what was amazing is, as I started to go down this path, I realized how much I enjoyed it. And the things I was learning and the challenges that we were facing were incredible. And we were able to take that business from zero to over $100 million in revenue in 9 years. And we were two kids in college that had no idea what we were doing. And, you know, we just kind of figured it out as we went. But it was such an incredible experience, and it really taught me, I think one thing it really taught me was just never give up. And as problems come, as challenges come, I think those that ultimately kind of break through are the ones that just never give up, and you just work through it. Right. And your mantra has to be, this is going to work. I'm going to make it work, and I'll do whatever I can to make sure this thing succeeds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, that can be, I think that owning a business is just the most incredible personal development program, because you don't know what you don't know, right? You have the idea and then you have no idea what those challenges and obstacles are going to be. But you're so right. If you don't have that pre-planned attitude that you're going to approach them with, it can be really daunting. And you know, I think that discouragement can be what separates people who are just so close or onto something really great from those who actually do it, is how much attention you're willing to give that discouragement. So keep going, because I know this gets really good.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think this is an important point. Building a business and being an entrepreneur is the most gut-wrenching emotional experience that you'll have. The only thing I can compare it to is being a parent. And what I mean by that is you wake up one morning and you're not a parent, and you go to bed that night and you are a parent, and you have no idea what you're doing, right? And you have this, you know, for us, we had a girl first, and I remember holding this girl thinking like, okay, I'm a parent. What do I do? How do I do this? And, you know, being a business owner is much the same way, where you have this, you know, this business that you have to nurture and you have to take care of and you have to, you know, treat it right and help it grow and, you know, give it the things it needs to be successful. And I equate it to, it was, you know, I was talking to my partner the other day and I said, this is the weird experience being a CEO of a company, because I want to be really excited, but I'm also mindful if I get too excited, I maybe miss some blind spots we have in the business. Mm. But then like some days I'm just like, oh my gosh, like this is so overwhelming. There's so much to do and I want to be excited. And usually those emotions are well within a day. So you live on this constant roller coaster of emotions. And, you know, what I always tell people is your ability to make your mind stronger than your emotions will probably be one of the biggest indicators is if you can do this and be successful long term. You have to build mental resiliency and just be able to just filter out all the noise and say, okay, I've got to focus on what the business needs and what's important to the business needs. And all this other stuff is just noise.
Yeah, that is so good. And, you know, I was talking to a client the other day and he asked me, he's like, so you know, you coach on all of this stuff, the emotional experience. And so do you just never have setbacks? And I'm like, absolutely not. Of course I do. I don't think it's whether or not the thought comes to your mind or whether or not you experience a negative emotion. I think it's how quickly do you rebound? And those are really the skill sets that we want to lean into to make this thing work. Because to your point, you're going to miss opportunities to make an impact and a meaningful impact quickly if you're focused on a negative emotion, which, as we all know, it's counterproductive to anything we're trying to do or want to be. So good.
Yeah, I agree. And if you think about some of the big mistakes, you know, we all make, at least for me, oftentimes when I'm making those mistakes, I'm in a heightened emotional state, which means I'm not thinking clearly and I'm consumed by something that I'm having an emotional response to, whether that's anger, whether that's, you know, excitement. Usually it's anger when we make bad decisions. and, you know, and those could be little things in the sense of like, you know, how do you work with a team member who's just made a big mistake or dropped the ball somewhere? And there's a huge difference in the outcome of that on how you approach it. If you come in guns blazing, ready to, you know, just tell somebody, you know, how terrible they are and the mistakes they made, that really doesn't build that person up and create a culture of kind of long-term team mentality. That's not to say that we can't hold people accountable, but if you go in, right, and really kind of dissect what just happened and walk through that and use that as a coaching opportunity, that person, you know, is going to look at you differently and is going to want to be on your team long-term because they see that you actually have their best interests at heart. So you just have to be so careful that you don't lead with your emotions, because you just tend to make such poor decisions when you're leading with your emotions.
Yeah, you know, and that's an important discussion because, you know, originally when we have these ideas, oftentimes it's just us or us and our assistant, you know, or us and our partner building from its infancy an idea, but as our business grows and our team grows, there actually has to be a conscious shift between, the results needing to be created and who's creating them. So originally I'm responsible for creating the results. It's all on me. And that's kind of my mindset around it. And that's also where I get some of my accolades is when I do it well and it grows. And you've got to shift that to developing your team members and delegating that both the responsibility and the accolades for doing so. And I think an important component that you're discussing here is the willingness to give them that room to succeed and also to fail. So talk me through that a little bit. When you know there's a best way to do something, a most efficient route, and it's no longer your direct task, how do you navigate that situation?
Yeah, for me, what I've learned to do is really kind of step back. I'll give them my opinion and say, hey, here's what I think. This is why I think this way. But ultimately, right, if you're going to scale an organization, it can't be contingent upon me. Most small businesses fail because the owner or the leader of that business becomes such a bottleneck because they feel like they have to touch everything and they have to be a part of every decision. And I sit there and say, there's no team in history that's been successful because the coach does everything. Mm-hmm. Right? The coach has people around them that they trust, and each player has a position. And if they play that position and trust their teammate that they're going to play their position, magical things happen. And so sometimes you just have to kind of sit back and allow it to play out and step in when you feel like you need to step in. But sometimes the right answer is just let them kind of struggle and potentially fail and then step in, right? And say, okay, what do we learn from this? Why did it go sideways? And what do we need to do in the future to be able to potentially mitigate things like this happening again? And what that ultimately does is it creates such a foundation of trust. And if you think about the people that you trust in your life, the way you interact with them is different than interacting with people that you don't trust. What I mean by that is you tend to get very, the word is vulnerable, but vulnerable in the sense of I can share how I actually feel and we can talk about what actually happened without this weird dynamic of politics or backbiting, right? You really trust that person. And what's magical about teams is when we trust each other, and when things go great, it's awesome. But when things go bad, we can actually attack a problem for what it is and not feel like it's a personal attack. And that's so crucial because I see this in teams all the time where everything becomes about politics and positioning. And for me, it's like, it's almost the death of the organization because now all of a sudden, everything becomes about how does this reflect on me? Versus what's best for the business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's best for the business is going to be absolutely a healthy culture where people can learn and grow and they know it's a safe place to fail. You know, there was a study I was reading, it came out a couple of years ago, and they surveyed some of the highest performing teams, and they were asking the team members, okay, when you think of your team, how would you describe it? And the word that they didn't say it was my friends. They didn't say it was my tribe, which has become a really popular word. They said it's like family. And I really started thinking about that because, you know, when you think of family, and for me, I would suggest that's also very close friends of the family who have been integrated into your central unit. But when you think about family, yeah, there's going to be some quirky things or some things you know about so-and-so when they are tired or whatever, but it's generally a place where you do feel like you could speak up in a comfortable way and where conflict is worked through in a way that creates a winning outcome for everybody there because the goal is to be together. And when we can approach our business families that way, it creates such a different dynamic rather than the competition you are alluding to or the politics involved.
Yeah, I would say a large majority of teams don't trust each other. And if you don't have trust, nothing else matters. It's not going to impact the team and the organization if you don't trust each other. And that starts with us at the top, of us willing to be vulnerable at times and say, hey, listen, I dropped the ball on this. I made a bad decision and I own it and I get it. So, I see this a lot where leaders, they kind of elevate themselves and it's almost like I can do no wrong, or you should be grateful that you work for me. And, all those weird dynamics that put people in this weird position versus saying, hey, listen, we're a team here. I'm part of the team. I always tell our team, I'm like, I'm a cog in a wheel. And I go, my cog is no different than your cog. It's not stronger. It's not bigger. It's not better. I'm a cog in a wheel. And I go, if we're all working together, we're going to be moving forward. And if we can all just agree on that, then we're probably going to make better decisions as well, because now people are much more willing to be vocal and share how they feel and how they view an opportunity or a problem without this weird thing of like, what's Kevin going to think of me? Or what's my manager going to think of me? And am I going to get in trouble for this? It's amazing what happens, because you tend to get to a better answer because people are willing to speak up.
Yes. Yes. I was just talking to someone yesterday and I said, I just want to make clear here, because we were discussing strategy on a situation. I said, I want to make clear here, I'm not suggesting that we're trying to eliminate the difference of opinion or the conflict. I'm suggesting that we disagree better, because we really need to understand the different perspectives at play so that we can come up with a true, rich solution here. Otherwise, what you get, the learning centers in our brain shut down when we feel threatened. And you talked about, worried about what Kevin's going to think. So if someone's feeling a risk of being shamed or, ostracized from the group, you may get temporary compliance, but you're not going to get an alignment that will transfer into other situations, which is ultimately what we want. So I love that you brought that up.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think the other thing that you will find as you go through this process is you're going to see people start, and I think you said it well, they feel like they're part of the family. They don't feel like because they say something, it should happen. People don't feel that way. All people ask is, let my voice be heard and let me know that you actually hear me. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm not saying I'm wrong. I just want to be heard. Right. So the other thing is, like, when you get to this point as a team and it's happening, you can disagree, but commit. And people are 100% okay with that. What people aren't okay with is just being railroaded. And, I see this a lot too in meetings, where I'll go to a meeting and the leader speaks first. And to me, that is such a huge mistake, because once that leader says what he or she thinks, everybody else is going to be like, yeah, I agree. I agree. Versus like, let's go around the table and everybody share how they view this, and I'll go last because I want to hear people's honest opinions on what they think. And it shouldn't be swayed by what I think.
Wow. I love that strategy. I think you're so right. Groupthink needs to be eliminated. And that's one way that we accidentally, totally, I think, perpetrate it. So it can become, it's good that you brought it up, because I think it would be easy to slip into, I'm going to be vulnerable and demonstrate that as the leader. Here's my thoughts on a situation that may be uncomfortable. But in this type of scenario, we'd want to just be really strategic about when we placed our opinion so that we're not casting an unnecessary or perceived opinion about how we're hoping the meeting goes. So good. Hey, so take me back. Okay, so that was a really rich discussion. I'm so glad that we went that way. But let's go back. So now you've got this $100 million business. College kids, still in college or just out of?
So we graduated at this point.
Okay, 9 years. So graduated. Mm-hmm. And now what?
Yeah, so, as we built that business, it turns out it was, a multitude harder than we ever imagined. And this goes back to the point. I think this is another important point is if you're not careful as you go through scaling a business, it'll just absolutely consume you. It'll consume you emotionally. It'll consume you intellectually. It'll consume you in ways that you don't understand, right? It impacts your family deeply because it overwhelms you and it's all you can think about. And so
why do you think that is? Why do you think there's such an intense toll taken on the family and your personal life?
You know, it's
like
because
what's underneath that intense focus?
I think for us, it's this principle of we can't lose. And we want it, and it's not the sense of, to me, this isn't I want to be clear, this isn't an issue of money either, because at some point, money means absolutely nothing. And if you talk to truly successful people, a vast majority of them will tell you that dollars do not equal happiness. At some point, each incremental dollar has a diminishing return to it. And so for us, it wasn't about chasing dollars. It was about, we just want to win. And we want to feel like we're executing at a very high level. And if you think about all the decisions that go into a business on a daily basis, right? You know, managing cash flow, you know, the org chart questions, the strategic questions, you've got customers, these things, like there's massive, massive decisions sometimes on a daily basis you're making, and it just consumes you in the sense of like, are we making the right decision? You're getting bombarded by all this information. And once you get into that mode, you don't turn it off. It's just, it just becomes who you are and how you think. You know, one of the key pieces of advice I give to people when they come to me and they say, I have this business idea, I want to build a business. The first thing I say is, are you married? And if the answer is yes, I say, is your wife on board? Or is your husband on board? Because they're going to take the brunt of this experience, because you're going to be consumed so much. And so having that support system around you is so critical, because there's going to be times when you're just like, the world's falling apart. I don't know if we'll make it another day. And just having that support system with you is a big differentiator.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that I can, I'm like, gosh, maybe I need to have you coach me after this. No, but we can relate to that, right? As business owners, it if you're not conscious about the process, it can become very unconscious. It's the same thing as if you go to a restaurant and they sit chips and salsa in front of you before you've even looked through the menu. You've gone through two bowls of chips. You're just unconsciously eating. You know, you have to be very, very aware of your participation in this entrepreneurship experience. Otherwise it can be a lot of things that it doesn't need to be.
It can, and it can, like I said, it can be consuming. So just be mindful of that. The other thing is just be mindful of your health, because the stress and the anxiety and the worry and all those things will consume you in ways that you don't understand today. And it still does for me even today, right? I have to just be very mindful of, am I managing my health? Am I doing the things I need to do to have long-term sustainability here? These are all things that you just don't think about as you go into this journey that will be really impactful to you. I say all that to answer your question is, you know, we scaled so fast that it took a massive hit on my health and my mental health, and, you know, ended up in the hospital, thought I was dying. You know, I told the doctor, I said, I think I'm dying. And he said, you're fine. All the tests are fine. He goes, you know, you're probably just stressed and wore out. And that was kind of an eye-opening experience for me, because I hadn't thought about, you know, I thought I was Superman up to that point. And that really kind of stopped me in my tracks and made me think about, what am I doing and what am I putting myself through? What am I putting my family through? And what is really the long-term, you know, sustainability of doing what I'm doing for the next 10, 15, 20 years? And the answer was, it's not sustainable. And, you know, so we made a decision as we kind of went through this process that we should sell this business. You know, me and my partner realized that long-term, it's probably not a business that we want to manage just because of the complexity and different things like that. And we were fortunate enough, you know, that we were able to sell it. We sold it to a big Fortune 100 company, which was a wild experience going through that and learning about how do you sell a business and going through that experience. And especially with someone that's a Fortune 100, right? The biggest of the biggest, was incredibly insightful. I learned a ton. We had no idea what we were doing. And, mm-hmm. you know, you just kind of figure it out as you go, but we're fortunate at the end that it worked out for us.
So let's say someone is recognizing that their spouse, their loved one, their friend, I mean, we're all friends here building businesses alongside each other. Let's say you're noticing that somebody is headed down that path, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally, they're not doing good and you think you know why. How could someone have approached you before you made it to the hospital that might have resonated with you?
I think this is an area that I've personally missed the mark on. And some of it is just because of my personality. You know, we were talking about this before, but at my very core, I'm an introvert. And so I internalize everything. Mm-hmm. And I stew on things, I think on things. And if they're bad things, they just fester with me. Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have understood the importance of a good mentor or group of mentors around me. Mm-hmm. And what I recommend to people too is find mentors who have actually done things that you want to do. Okay. There's a lot of people out there that profess to know what to do, but they've never been through the experience. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you're a dentist and you want to be at 20 locations, for example, go find a mentor that's actually built a DSO to 20 locations. And what you'll find is people that have been successful love to share what they've learned, the ups and downs. And so for me, I wish I would have had maybe, you know, better mentorship around me where I could go to them and say, hey, listen, I'm really struggling. Here's the things I'm struggling with. And I'm genuinely worried about this. Mm-hmm. And to get their advice, the problem is I just keep everything to myself. And it just blew up in my face. And to be honest, to this day, I still have some of the ramifications of those decisions. I still struggle with some health things that I have to be really careful with. And so I think if I would have had better mentors, that was my fault. That was my miss. I think they probably could have helped me avoid it, some of those big mistakes, not only mm-hmm. business-wise, but personally as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So maybe just something. So if you are recognizing that you don't have a mentor and you're trying to build a business, get a mentor. And I wholeheartedly agree with you. I will always have. I have multiple coaches, and I'm a member of a couple of different groups. And for various reasons, they each serve a different purpose and I contribute to those in different ways. But I don't want to do it alone, and you don't have to. If someone doesn't have that, put yourself back to pre-hospital. Could someone have said anything to you like, hey, Kevin, I'm building a business and I have a mentor. Maybe you would benefit from a mentor. Here's how it's helped me. Would that have even landed with you? Or do you feel like that's just something you had to conclude on your own?
I think it's a lesson I had to learn. The other thing is, I don't think most people would have known that because I hide it really well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most of us hide our deep insecurities and our struggles really well for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have been more vocal. And that's why, you know, I think in the last couple of years, I've gotten really vocal about my mental health struggles and the challenges that they are for me. I used to look at it as a pretty shameful thing, to be honest. And now I look at it as, hey, here's an opportunity to help people. And it's been really incredible as I've been able to talk to people and they share about how they really struggle with anxiety or depression or deep insecurities. And it's such an incredible experience for me to sit across from them and say, I get it. I totally get it. You know, I've been awake all night having massive panic attacks, and I've dealt with not wanting to get out of bed and taking all my energy just to get out of bed to function for the day. And it's good to know that other people are going through those struggles, and that even though you go through those struggles, you can get through them and you can be successful. I wish more people would be open about it, because it's nothing to be shameful of. You know, so there's nothing there's things I can do to help mitigate it.
Right.
But for some reason, you know, I've basically what I say now is I've been blessed with this great thing called anxiety, because it's truly transformed me in a lot of ways, and I'm grateful for it. But I think for me, I wasn't vocal about it, and I didn't even know how to really process it at first. So I think it would have been tough for people to recognize that versus like reaching out saying, hey, listen, I'm having daily panic attacks. I feel like I can't breathe. I can't function. I need help. You know, there's people around you that will help you, but sometimes you just have to be willing to say, hey, here's what's going on.
Absolutely. And I think that just draws, you know, us right back to the whole family thing, because I'm with you. You know, I used to think that my struggles or my, you know, things that I didn't, they're not the things that most people glorify on social media or businesses proclaim as their, as the things that they're proud of. But, I'm sober, and that has been one of my greatest gifts. And what I think is so beautiful about being willing to open up and share about these different experiences we have are there's somebody that struggles with anxiety that doesn't want to learn from someone who's never struggled with anxiety about how to cope. And there's someone who'd like to be sober that is never going to learn from someone who's never had a drink, right? And so there are incredible gifts. And when we're willing to just open up just a little bit, it's incredible the influx of community that just is immediately wanting and excited about what you're willing to share.
Yeah, I totally agree. And people are out there. So if anybody's listening to this and they have these struggles, especially mental health issues, I'd love to hear from you. There's a lot of people around you that are probably struggling with very similar things. And, you know, my hope is that they know, one, that it can get better, and two, is that this doesn't define you, and don't make it define you. And it can actually teach you incredibly important lessons. One huge lesson has taught me is patience. I'm so much more patient now than I used to be, because I have to be. And it's helped me make better business decisions, because I'm not so anxious to make a big decision. I can kind of just process it and sometimes just let things play out before I need to make a decision, because I feel like my life in large part is just patience of like, you know, they say healing comes with time. Healing doesn't automatically come with time, but it takes time. Mm-hmm. And in business, I think about growth doesn't automatically come with time, but it does take time. And that's really helped me, I think, be a better leader and a better business decision because some of these things I've gone through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for clarity, the $100 million business we built, that's not Mango Voice. And so you sold that business. And then what was your transition?
Yeah. So we sold that business and, you know, I took some time off so I could feel like a human again. And It's I told my wife after we went through this experience, I said, listen, if I come back to you and say, hey, we're going to build another business, I go, I just want you to throw a punch me. Like, just beat me up. Tell me I'm an idiot. Like,
yeah,
talk me out of it. And she's great. She's like, yeah, okay. So 6 months later, I came to her and said, hey, learning about this business called Mango Voice. The founder of Mango Voice is actually my neighbor. Happened to be talking to him. The business was at a point where it was him and another partner. They were having partner issues. The business had really stalled out. And they needed somebody to really help them understand how do we get to the next point. And so I told Court, I said, hey, I listen, talking to Dave, I really think we could help him. The things that he needs help with, we're really good at. So, I'm going to talk to Bo, but I think we're going to invest in Mango. I remember vividly, she looks at me and she shakes her head and she goes, you're such an idiot. And walked off. And you just have to know Court. Like, she's such a genuine, kind person. But it cracked me up. And I go, so what does that mean? She goes, I know you're going to do it. And you have my support. And so in April of 2017, we came on to Mango, invested in Mango. At that time, they had about 350 customers. Today, we're north of 7,000 customers. It's been an incredible journey. I will tell you, doing it a second time doesn't make it any easier. It's just different. But it's been an incredible journey. For me, it's been amazing. So in our last business, Bo was the CEO. So I was in large part more of like a support to him, which I'm totally comfortable with. In fact, I like to be in the background. So it worked really well for me. He could be more of the face of the company. Now that I've become the face of Mango, it's been an incredible opportunity for me to learn and grow, personally and professionally. And you said it well at the beginning. We've been so blessed to have an incredible team. The people that we've been able to find and bring on our team are just absolutely amazing. They embody who Mango is. They bought into the vision. They bought into what we're trying to do. And listen, at the end of the day, in large part, they're the ones that make this happen. And super grateful to have the people on the boat that we've got, because they truly are incredible.
They really are. I got to meet even a few more of them out in Boston recently. And I was just like, oh, everybody at this company, it's the vibe that's upbeat. It's friendly and helpful. And oh, I'm not the one you need. Let's find the one you need. This person's going to go over there. I'll text him over here. It's just this helpful, friendly atmosphere. I just really love it. What do you feel to attract the right type of person for your team?
I think this goes back, this is a deep conversation, but culture is the most important thing at a business, right? Next to product market fit, culture is the most important thing. It's the most difficult thing to define. And you have to build that culture to attract the right people. And when you meet the right people, they're almost drawn to it because they sense it, right? But if you say, can you explain to me why you were drawn to Mango? The answer is, I don't know, but I just sensed and I felt something similar to what you're saying. But that has to start at the top. And you have to live what you preach. Too many times, you have your core values. But when you meet leaders, it's pretty clear they don't live those core values. And if I can sense it, people that are working for you know that as well. And so you got to live what you preach. And that is incredibly important. And that's something that I'm not perfect at it, but I try really hard to do. And one of the things I believe deeply is we take care of our customers and we'll go above and beyond. I get several messages of every day of people that are like, hey, I'm having an issue with Mango or I need help. And it's like, I'll help them. You know, we want to be that company that helps our customers out and treats people the right way. I think it's a lost art, Chelsea, in the world that we live in, to care about people, to take care of people, and to be genuine. I believe companies that do that have a higher probability of success long term.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, and there's never been a more exciting time to be in any industry, really, with all of the technology advances. But I think it's also very important to remember that behind all of it, there's still going to be humans executing. And humans need to be taken care of in a different way than AI ever will. There's a distinct emotional process that our employees go through from the time that we start interviewing them all the way through the duration of their time with us. And if we're not aware of those things and strategically implementing and nurturing that process, we're going to lose them. So what are some of the things you guys do to nurture your employees' experience in your organization?
Yeah, this goes back to that question of, like, you know, defining culture. You know, a few things that are important to us is building that foundation of trust. It's really important. You know, we try as hard as we can to build that trust. I think the other thing is letting people know really what our vision is, what we're trying to accomplish, and really painting that picture for them. I think is incredibly important so they can buy into what we're trying to accomplish. And the reality is like, this takes time, right? So when we hire someone new at Mango and they come in, a lot of times their first response is, this is kind of a different place. What I mean by that is we have a really flat org chart. So Mango doesn't have any VPs, any C-level people, I guess, besides me. It's a very flat, because I want to be really dialed into what's happening. And I think building, you know, complex org charts actually hurts the business. And so, you know, everybody has access to me. Anybody can message me, anybody can email me, you know, I'll engage them. I'm not too busy to talk to people. And I think the reality, something that's been really, I think, really cool for me to watch is the people that we've had to let go at Mango haven't been my decision. It's been the team coming to me saying, hey, here's the problem with this individual. We don't feel like they're buying into the culture. They're not doing X, Y, and Z. We need to get them off the bus. And to me, that was such a cool experience, because the team now is basically defending the culture and telling the business, these are the people we want on the team, and these are the people we want off the team. And that's a really cool place to be, because now instead of me, you know, pounding the pulpit, right? Mm-hmm. It's each member of Mango is saying, we understand this is important. We're going to protect it. And if people aren't going to buy into this, we got to get them off, Kevin. Get them out of here, because they're hurting the team. And so I think when you can get to that point, you know you're doing something right and you're building the right culture when your team starts to defend that and understand the sanctity of it.
And that is so powerful, because some of the biggest fires that we put out are discord between leadership and doctors, or between team members who are no longer aligned. And so I love the way that you've described, you know, once certain things are put in place, they become advocates for that culture. And then they, you know, my favorite is when they're calling their friends, they're like, you got to come work here, you know, bringing in additional people who are a great fit for that culture. Gosh, this is so cool. Okay, so what would you say, you said it was different building this business because it's the second time around. What would you say are one of the biggest things that you've done right this time? You just knew to do this thing.
I think one of the big things we've done right is I think being patient. We're not, it's interesting, the first time around you're pretty anxious, and it's like,
yeah,
we got to do this. This time around, it's like, I guess the best way to describe it is the previous business was basically day to day, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You're just looking at things day to day today. Bo and I now think in like 5-year increments. So we think in 5, 10, 15, 20-year increments. I realize we have the, like, we're fortunate that we have the ability to do that. But by thinking, you know, 5 or 10 years down the road, it's been really interesting to see kind of how you think strategically when you start thinking more long term. Mm-hmm. And when you do that too, you tend to not get consumed as much in the short term because you're trying to build for the long term. And I know that's a very, very hard concept for people that when this is their first time, because, you know, our first business, when we woke up, the reality was this business was everything. And if this business didn't succeed, we were literally left with nothing and we'd have to start over from zero, which is fine. But that's a different mentality than saying, okay, we can build something, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road. Mm-hmm. And this is where I say we're fortunate, because even if, you know, if Mango in the early years blew up, we were just fine. It didn't matter. But it's really helped us think differently, which to me has been just really impactful to the decisions that we're making at Mango.
That's awesome. That's so good. Yeah. I love that you shoehorned in there, but even if we had to start back at ground zero, that'd be okay. That's such an important attitude to have about all of it. And I think you're right. It only is something that can come with patience and growth and just maybe some emotional maturity around the entrepreneurship process. Mm-hmm. The fact that it is a process, it's not transactional, even if you would really need it to be, because you're right. A lot of people, we have this business, it's important to us, and we want it to cash flow and we want it to be healthy now. But it's going to be the planting of the seeds, watering, letting the sun set in, you know, all of the things that actually develop it into something that's a healthy machine that it's going to require if that's your ultimate goal. So 100%. Good. What would you say is, you know, you've mentioned some mistakes along the way. What would you say is one of your biggest mistakes that you've made that you've learned from?
Wow. I would say the biggest mistake I made is probably outside of business. And it was not being present when, you know, my two oldest girls were growing up. I was gone a lot. I was really distracted. And I feel like I missed a lot of early years opportunities with them. And I'm now, you know, working hard. And it's not that I have a good relationship with my kids. I feel like I do. But getting that deep, like, emotional connection with them has taken some time. It's much easier when your kids are younger to be able to form that deep relationship with. I think one of my biggest regrets is just not being more present when they were young. I have two younger boys. I'm much more present in their life. You know, Saturday mornings is my time. I take the boys. It's one, you know, it's time that we spend together doing whatever they want. Mm-hmm. I'm much more present at night, putting them to bed, things like that. At the end of the day, when you look back, business is business and money is money. But the things that really matter are your family and your relationships. And just don't neglect those, because that's where a lot of your grit will reside.
So here's what I think I can say in summary of what so many people have said to me just in the past month, but I'm doing this for my family. And so can you talk to me? I know that you said you're really introverted, but can you talk to me about what exactly is the price that you pay? What happens internally? What are the thoughts that run through your mind when you look back and realize, okay, I just missed out on basically 4 years of my kids' lives? What does that really cost you?
Yeah, I think there's some people that don't recover from that. Which is a tragedy, right? These these children and these relationships in our lives, they need us, and they need, you know, the way we view the world. They need our personality. They need our insights. But most importantly, kids equate love with time. And if you don't give them the time, there's a deficit in their life. And I think what I wish I would have understood more when I was in that moment, because to your point, that's how I thought, which is everything I'm doing is for you. I want my kids to be able to have a life that I didn't have. My parents were incredible, amazing, but they both worked. Neither of them were college graduates. And they gave me a good life, but I wanted to give my kids something different. And so that was in large part my driver, which is I want to create this incredible like life for my kids that they can do whatever they want, things like that. The problem is when you look back, you realize what they want, what I want, isn't the same thing. And kids don't care about worldly possessions in large part. They don't care about that. They care about being loved and having, you know, spending time with dad or spending time with mom and, you know, building, you know, those relationships. Because here's like the thing is once they get to be teenagers, that ship's almost sailed, right? And now as they go through these major kind of life decisions about friends, about, you know, the things they're going to do, you need to have that emotional connection with them so that they know they can come to you and be able to share the things they're going through. And I think that's really tough, right? When you just haven't been present in their life. So I agree with you. I think we all do it for our families. My point is like, at what cost?
Mm-hmm. One of the things my husband and I have had deep discussions about are we envision our kids, you know, 25 on up, we envision them as adults themselves and sitting across from them at a table and think to ourselves, okay, what would this child's advice be to me in this situation? I'm thinking about, you know, fill in the blank. I'm thinking about being gone basically for the next month, except for one day a weekend, so that you can have these opportunities, or I can do it a little differently. What would their advice be? And it's really interesting with their different personalities. We usually come to the same conclusion that those things just aren't the same. They're not the priority for our kids that they are for us to give to our kids.
100%. 100%.
All right. So Mango Voice, you've got Mango Voice. What is Mango Voice? Just for anybody listening, just in case.
Yeah. So Mango Voice is a cloud-based phone service, you know, primarily focused in the dental space. And so we do your phones in the office.
Obviously run by really incredible people. And I'm so excited. I've been just, you know, since we've started connecting, and I think from our first conversations to now, you've been doing some really cool growth. And so what's next for you, Kevin?
Yeah, for us, you know, we see a lot of opportunity at Mango. We're working on some new technology that we feel like will be transformational. And for me, it's, you know, I think Mango is a long-term opportunity to build a really great business that can be sustainable for, you know, decades to come, which we're really excited about. You know, our hope is to continue to bring innovative technology to the dental space that helps dental practices be able to manage their practices better. And ultimately too, you know, to be able to support and give back to the dental community and our partners, which mean everything to us.
That's great. Well, I want to have another conversation as these advances take place and you keep doing work on these other initiatives. I think it's going to be really exciting. Do you have any last thoughts for anybody who's building a business and just kind of finding themselves in that space? Like what's one thing that everybody who's building a business can or ought to consider doing right now that would improve their whole experience of entrepreneurship?
Yeah, so there's actually something I've been thinking about. So I recently, well, recently as in Sunday, watched is it Boys in the Boat? Is that the name of it?
Oh, I
Boys
saw
in the
your
Boat?
post on this. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, so I watched this movie, Boys in the Boat, recommend it to everybody. It's an incredible movie for a multitude of reasons. But there's a point in the movie that just like impacted me because I believe so deeply in this. But Joe, who was one of the best rowers on this team, was just struggling. And the coach kicked him off the boat and replaced him with an alternative rower. And there's a point in the movie where the coach is coming down the stairs and Joe's there and he meets him and he says, "Hey, coach, I want my spot back." And coach is like, "Why?" And Joe goes on to explain this, why he wants his seat back. And the coach said something that I think if leaders would understand, this is how you build strong teams. He says, "Joe, it's not about you. As strong as you are, it's not about you. It's not about me. It's about the boat." And if we could just remember that the boat, symbolically is the business and the team. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's about the boat. And if we think in those context, in that context, we're going to make such better business decisions because it truly is about the boat. And I see so many times, Chelsea, people will look at my oar. My oar is so much cooler than yours, or my oar does so much. Or, maybe you have somebody on the bank of the river yelling at you why you're not rowing the right way. And you're sitting there thinking, "Well, why don't you pick up an oar? And why don't you jump in this boat and row with me before you critique how I'm rowing?" But if business owners, dentists, I don't care who it is, just remember it's about the boat. And what kind of boat are you building? What kind of team are you putting in that boat? And what do you want from that boat? And if you think in those contexts, you're going to eliminate a lot of the issues you have. And you're going back, like you will make such better business decisions. So my advice to everybody, hopefully if you take one thing from this podcast, is it's about the boat.
It's so perfect. That was a beautiful ending to a really fun conversation, Kevin. You mentioned, if somebody wants to reach out to you, business things, anxiety things, other things, boat things, how would you recommend they reach out to you?
Yeah, so a couple ways. I hate email, so don't email. Well, you can email me, but it may take me a minute to get back to you. Can I just tell my cell phone number right here? Is that are you
Yeah,
okay with that? Okay.
sure. Yeah.
So my personal cell phone, so my number is 208-821-2171. You can text me. The other thing I do a lot of is Facebook Messenger. That's a great way, or LinkedIn as well. You can message me. I respond to all my messages. I'd love to hear from people. So, yeah, please reach out to me. And if you want to learn more about Mango, you can go to mangovoice.com and learn more about us there and grab some info and call us if you're interested in learning more.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Kevin. This was a lot of fun. I always love talking to you, and I'm so glad to have you on today.
Yeah, thank you. This is incredible. And for people to get me on podcast, it's no small feat. So congratulations. And it's been a lot of fun.
I appreciate you joining me for today's episode. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit dentallife.coach for access to additional coaching tools, as well as more episodes to help you create the dental life you truly desire.